Views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga and this beautiful...
Hey, good morning.
And what it means. I played Jackie Blue before we came on the talk show, and I want to, and this is Dylan, so I got to put this aside for a second. A friend of mine, I played Jackie Blue because it was the only song I could think that had Jackie in the song. I want to give a big hello to Jackie Podrick and her husband. Jackie delivered a baby boy on May 19th, and now their fun begins. Jackie's a phys ed teacher at a school I deliver kids to, and it's been fun kidding around with her about the pregnancy. I did predict the delivery date after 17 tries, and even the reliable Dominic the Italian Christmas donkey, who has been spot on over the years, wasn't up to the task. I think Jackie deliberately held off delivering the baby so I could miss so many dates. But all the best to Jackie and her husband from Talk Saratoga, and enjoy this new chapter of your life, and we'll see you sometime over the summer. Okay, I want to introduce our special guest today, and I do mean special. He's a great guy. Dylan Moran, who's running for Commissioner of Public Works. Good morning, Dylan.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you so much for having me here.
Oh, hey, it's my pleasure, believe me. Dylan, the first thing I like to do when we have our guests on is for us to ask you for a little biography, if you can.
Sure. I mean, you know, first off, I just really appreciate having the chance to speak to the community and introduce myself via WSPN. I was born and bred here, thoroughly thoroughbred, as they say. I'm a first-generation American, and by that what I mean is my father and his family immigrated to the United States in the 1950s, ultimately settling in Saratoga Springs, and my mother's family settled here after World War II, but as things are, we have family that goes back into the 1800s, so it's kind of an interesting balance between... you know, kind of the old school Saratoga, and then the phenomena that I think a lot of people have right now of moving to Saratoga and also being new to the community. You know, I think the demographics point out that more than half the folks that live in Saratoga didn't exist in town before 1999, and we're a community that constantly turns over and changes. So, you know, I'm bringing a perspective to this role in that I've been here since the 70s, you know, when I was born. I know what the town used to be like. I know the folks who made the investments and had the vision back then that have brought us to where we are today. You know, very appreciative of that.
Let me ask you about the qualifications that you have for the position you're running, because a lot of times people that run for the commissioner's position really have no understanding of what, you know, the job entails.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the form of government that we have unfortunately does put people into positions where they wouldn't otherwise have those responsibilities, for instance, if they were a legislator in a normal city council. There are a few offices, specifically the one that I'm running for, that quite frankly, the regulatory environment, the technological environment, has really just extended past the capacity of the current commissioner to understand the issues, for instance, with water, and how critical it is to be at the cutting edge of an understanding the fundamental issues. He doesn't. He just doesn't get it. And, you know, listen, I have respect for anybody who puts himself into this crucible of running for office, let alone has been in office for 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of folks vote for Skip because they know his name, and that's it.
Right, and name recognition.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's a fine reason to vote for somebody. Maybe you trust their character, or you trust their decision-making prowess, but fundamentally, I'm 48 years old. 44 of the 48 years I've been on the planet, this department's been run by two last names, neither one of which has any sort of what you would call basic qualifications to be in charge of a water system. And, you know, obviously we have professionals that manage these systems, but ultimately the decision-making, the choices that they make reside with the commissioner.
With the commissioner, right.
And so my background, I'm a chemical engineer by degree. I went to Clarkson University, and I've been working in water for 25 years, all various types, wastewater, municipally and industrially, potable water, which is our drinking water supply on the municipal side. I understand the issues. I understand the emerging issues. And I'm just going to, you know, be quite honest. We are not at a standard or a level that we should be at, mm-hmm. given the city, given the wealth that exists within this city. We need to be making the investments in our infrastructure to support ourselves in the future, and we're not making those investments.
If you want to call and ask Dylan a question, you can do so by dialing 518-580-5783. That's 580-5783, and again, you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM. You know, you said something, Dylan, that really hits home, that people should be aware of. Things change so fast today.
Absolutely.
That you have to keep up with pretty much. I mean, when you're running a department, you have to keep up pretty much with all these new technologies and what's going on. And, you know, you're certainly qualified for that because I'm sure you have to do that in your job.
Absolutely. But, you know, again, with where we are, unfortunately, you know, the current commissioner doesn't even quite, I think, grasp the underlying regulatory environment where our water's been regulated by the U.S. EPA Clean Water Act from the 70s. We recently had a DOH, Department of Health, reportable incident, you know, about something that's been regulated since the 70s. I mean, the comment asleep at the switch, I think, is very apropos because, again, it's unacceptable that we fall out of standards that have existed for 35 years.
You know, I just want to mention to you, we talked about this without getting into, you know, a blame game on what's going on, but there was a water study done on Saratoga Lake water, and the study cost quite a bit of money, and I know you're not for using Saratoga Lake water. I want to make that very clear, but the study was important, wasn't it?
Well, the community made an investment, I think, of $2.3 million in having this study done. I think the critical issue is that as a community, we need to control the future of our access to drinking water. We don't want to become a part of the county platform, but quite frankly, if we don't make the investments that we need to make in the protection of our water source and strengthening the quality of our water source, we ultimately may not have a choice but to go back to Saratoga Lake. And that's not something that we want to do, but the study that you're referring to, the current commissioner ultimately made the choice not to pay a small fee to the state to continue having that as a recognized and also authorized access point.
Sure.
It's a choice. So it's like a lot of things. It's an insurance policy, perhaps, you know, appropriate sort of reference point to it. And again, I appreciate you recognizing my position on using the lake, because a lot of folks are trying to, and by a lot of folks, I mean the current commissioner is trying to cast certain positions on me that aren't true.
No, I know that you're not in favor of using the lake, and we did speak about this. And, you know, it seems to me that Saratoga is a more reactive government than a proactive. And as we talked about, what happens 15 years in the future? You never know. So that plan on the shelf could have been, you know, would have had to have been retuned, but so not to the tune of maybe $2.3 million.
Well, listen, 20 years ago, $2.3 million is probably about $3.5 to $4 million
right.
today. So first and foremost, yeah. And again, I giggled when you said reactive. The only investments of any note that have been made during the current commissioner's reign have either been under consent decree, and what that is, that's a technical term that refers to when the Department of Health comes in and says, you must do this. That's not proactive. When you're told by the regulating officials, you have to do something, that says you're behind the ball. Mm-hmm. You're not ahead of the game. There's a term that a lot of folks in this city wrap their arms around, and justifiably so. It's sustainability. That term has a lot of different meanings. It's, you know, do we set our community up environmentally that it's sustainable? Do we have programs and processes that ultimately self-fulfill themselves, whether it be through remuneration or the esoteric value of it to the community holistically? Sustainability in the role that I'm talking about is having the ability to understand our failing infrastructure, and our infrastructure is failing. That's just reality. Things break down. You know, we have pipes under the ground that are feeding drinking water to people that are over 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that may seem quaint and cute and, you know, something to talk about with the locals.
Right.
But that's not what you want.
No, it's not safe, number one.
Exactly. And the for me, what it means is having a 5-year, a 10-year, a 20-year plan and a schedule that's communicated to the community. These are the type of rate increases in your water potentially we need to make, because the way we fund that investment is through user fees on water. We haven't changed our rate in over 10 years. That's suggesting that things aren't more expensive than they were 10 years ago, that we aren't 10 years down the road and things have been continuing to fail. The only things that we do are fix breaks, and then when people, like the government, tells us we need to do something, we do that. It's at least 6 times as expensive to fix a repair than it is to predict and plan for and execute projects to replace our infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you clarifying what's being said, because the lake is a touchy issue. And
rightfully so.
And rightfully so is correct.
It's not our lake.
But I no, it isn't. But I do like your explanation of being prepared in the future, and not in 1 or 2 years. But you never know what's going to happen. And our current water source is right off of Route 50, probably about 3 feet. And I know that that people in the past have worried about a fuel tanker over, you know, rolling over and polluting the water, and we're going to be in trouble.
Yep. And again, you know, I don't want anyone to think for a second that, you know, as you said, sort of casting blame or pointing fingers. I'm running for something. I have a vision for what this community needs as a pertains to our water system, as it pertains to the management of the Department of Public Works. So when you bring up you know, an issue like a truck could you know, pollute our water source,
mm-hmm.
It's actually just true. You know, watershed protection is an incredibly important aspect of, you know, keeping control of your water. And something as simple as a fuel truck, which go up and down those roads all the time, going into our water source could have dramatic effects on our ability to be sustainable as a community. Water is the fundamental building block of human beings.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and again, you know, when I look at all the roles within the community, there is nothing more personal than the water that you ingest. And I take that responsibility seriously.
Yeah.
We are protecting and have the responsibility to protect the health of the community.
Right.
Period.
Well, I have a friend who's up from the south, and he's been here since last summer. And he can't believe how much water we have up here. It astounds him. And I said, well, we take it for granted. I mean, you see the creeks overflowing at this time of the year, and our water source goes up. And we really take water for granted. And, you know.
There's going to be wars fought over water in the coming decade. There's going to be mass migration as a result of the lack of and the scarcity of water in certain areas of our planet. We're very fortunate to live where we do.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean there aren't challenges. As I, you know, I mentioned, there are things called emerging contaminants that we barely now have the technology to see, you know, detect, speciate, and then ultimately understand the health impacts of them. PFOAs, PFOS, PFAS, these are substances that, for instance, Hoosick Falls water system was destroyed because of an industrial contaminant that was going on for years, but we didn't have the technology to understand it. It's critical that the person and the focus of the folks in this business are looking to the future and looking to today. And again, we've got great workers. I don't think that they're the issues that exist have anything to do with the workforce. It's the leadership. It's the lack of intellectual curiosity. It's the let's do the bare minimum. And quite honestly, if it doesn't benefit Skip Scirocco, it's not getting done.
Right. No, I understand that. You talked about the city workforce. Have they recovered from the time that when they were cutting back because of the loss of the VLT money? I know they had layoffs, but I don't know if they've ever hired guys back.
You're exactly right. You know, first off, you know, the motivations for wanting to serve in government, I didn't quite touch on that because I think that's probably the most important question that you could answer as a candidate. I'm very fortunate. I've done well in my life. The opportunities that I've had, you know, chance favors a prepared mind. You've got to go out and work for it. But this country has provided me, in this region, in this area, in this community, has provided me, you know, incredible opportunities. And I'm very grateful for that. And knowing, you know, as a first-generation American, the people that were before us, I just feel and have felt my whole life, and I don't think it's normal, like a seven-year-old is interested in being in politics, but it's true. And I've just felt this need to serve the community my whole life, and I'm finally at a point where I can take this challenge on, and I also truly believe I'm the right person for the job.
Well, you know, we've always said, and I think you'll agree.
But I didn't answer your question. I'm also a politician.
Oh, go ahead.
No, what was the question again?
No, we were just talking about you know, what gave you the impetus to run.
Oh, well, absolutely. You know, and again, look, our drinking water in general meets the bare minimum standards that are regulated by the Clean Water Act. But unfortunately, I think anyone that's lived here for a little while recognizes that the quality of the water that you're drinking has gone down. Our water source is heavily laden with organics. It's just the nature of the depth of the water. And we overchlorinate our water heavily. And it's to a point where most folks that I talk to who live on the east side who are closer to the water plant, it's undrinkable.
Yeah.
Now, folks who live outside town, like, for instance, in Geyser Crest, where there's a different source water there, they have different issues. They have hard water. They're starting to have occluded pipes and losing pressure. For instance, I represent the back half, the southern half of the Crest for the committee, the Democratic Committee, and the folks that I talk to report those issues. But when I talk to folks on the east side, when I turn the tap on and I recognize it smells like a pool, I have instruments, you know, as a professional in my job, I test the water, and we should not be drinking water that has 2, 2.5, 3 part per million chlorine in it. That's unacceptable. While it's in spec, it's absolutely unacceptable to drink that much chlorine. And I recommend that anybody who has concerns about that use a point source filter. And what I mean by that is whether it's your refrigerator or the things that you can put on your spigot, It's a carbon filter. It's something that removes those halogens, and chlorine causes cancer.
Period. Well, especially in during racing season. I mean, they dump more.
They have to, yeah. Absolutely, because yeah. There's, again, the distribution network being what it is throughout the track, the animals, the waste, the things that come with that, they have to have sanitary water over there. Mm. And, you know, and that's really the critical thing. During that month or month and a half, 2 months now, when that facility is at peak operation, again, the heartbeat of our community, we're at about 85% of our maximum pumping capacity. So that means we don't have a lot of room for error. And as we continue to develop as a community, and again, I'm not against development in any way, shape, or form, but I think it ought to be done responsibly. I think it ought to be managed. And I think we certainly should look at things like how much water do we have left before we have to make a significant investment in increasing our capacity or potentially having to shift the source because we don't have that capacity. So, you know, it's a really complicated issue. And I think as a community, we really do need to have that conversation about how big is a community that we want to have. Sure. How do we want to use that remainder, that 15%, let's say, at peak flow? What do we want to bring into our community that starts to add up to that 100%?
Right. And I think the point we are right now in the history of Saratoga, you know, everybody knows I'm a big change of government person, but we need more professional people in our leadership because of all the changes that go on every day. And, you know, I mean, you being an expert in that field, you know, I'm sure you're going to get a great deputy commissioner. But, I mean, there's a lot more detail in departments today. And there's one professional I can think of is John Frank, who you really don't need a CPA to be commissioner of accounts. But I think it helps. It probably should be commissioner of finance would be the... But I think we need people of knowledge in the position that they're holding to keep the city going because, like you said, it's growing all the time. There's more problems when you have expansion like we've had. And it taxes our infrastructure.
And absolutely it does. And disproportionately, the type of growth that we've had. And again, I have no problem with development. Zero. I've personally benefited through business investment in businesses that have benefited from the concentration of folks living downtown.
Sure.
You know, I think you go downtown any weekend during the year, these are problems people in other towns would die for. You know, again, these are great things. We're very fortunate. You know, you bring up John Frank. John's been in office, I think, 14 years now.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a tremendous job.
Yeah.
You know, you know, Michelle Madigan, who's been in office, she has helped to manage the finances such that our bonding rating is great. You know, you brought up the incident where we had to lay people off. It's, for me, it's the most shameful thing I've ever witnessed in the history of this city.
And that's when I want to go into a little more detail.
You know, I'm a union man. I grew up in a union household. The rights for folks to collectively bargain are fundamental to our country, the advancements that we all now take for granted, like a 40-hour work week, like paid vacation, like the notion of a minimum wage, which, you know, the statement in and of itself is absurd. We ought to be paying people a living wage.
Oh, exactly.
There's an element of dignity within work that has been stripped away, and it's the workers that make our country run.
Right. Well, one of the reasons I think we got in a bind at that period, and which I don't think would have happened.
That's the question I didn't answer, by the way.
Oh, go ahead.
I just recalled. So, no, the department is undermanned.
Yeah.
Okay, there's been attrition. There were the layoffs. I think the crews are threadbare. I think that forces them, especially when we're in that reactionary mode, to be put into positions that are unsafe. I want everybody who comes into work, one, to have the dignity of the work, to feel good about the service that they're given to the community, because we as citizens value it.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to have a work environment that also gives them the opportunity to go home safe every single day.
Right.
And I'm not saying that anyone's been injured or it's the potential for injury, the term risk management. You know, I'm well-trained in issues of assessing risk. And, you know, when you have a guy in a hole in the middle of the night trying to fix a leaky pipe on the side of the road, there's no other way to look at it than that's a dangerous situation. Mm-hmm. I don't want people in a hole in the middle of the night fixing a brake. I want to predictively plan, set up jobs, fix the issues, have them prioritized so that we can do the work that we need to do safely and go home every day.
Right.
And well, again, those guys deserve to have the full crews.
Sure.
You know, we as a constituency have a right to expect the services that we pay for.
Right. Well, I didn't want to get off the subject of the number of workers we have, because I still want to talk about that a little bit. But I think what happened was a blip. The governor withheld $3.5 million in the middle of the budget year.
Yep.
So I think that it was a necessity to have the layoffs, but
it wasn't. I don't think. I think it was a short term. A really poor choice.
Well, but we didn't know that at the time. And I don't like to second guess what happened. However, right after that, as Madigan says, we're flush with money. I mean, she hasn't raised taxes in so long, which I think is not a good thing. But anyway, they should have replaced the workers or called back the workers that were laid off that next year. And we got the money back.
100%, I agree.
No, I know what you're saying, that they may have rushed to judgment, but you didn't know if that was going to be the end of the VLT money or not. And it did happen in the middle of a budget year. But now that we're back into you know, the regular working financial, we need, I mean, we had our own, and I want to get into this later too, but we had our own sidewalk crews. We had any time, we didn't have to call in engineers every time we planned something. We had the workers for it.
Yep.
And we don't have that now. And as you attributed before, anytime you call people in to do the job that the city workers can't do, it costs money.
It could potentially cost more money. You know, I think you have to evaluate the quality and the scope of the work that is being done. You know, again, the lowest bidder isn't necessarily the best bidder when you look at the end of job total cost. But in general, because of the I'll call it streamlined nature of our current staffing, we actually just can't commit to jobs that like that, because if an issue comes up, if there's another line break, if a road collapses, which happens all the time, those folks have to go respond to that that emergency. And so it's really difficult when you open up the ground and you're working on a pipe, or when you're laying concrete, you can't just run away from it. You have to finish the job. So it that lack of forethought, that lack of, again, control of your own destiny, it's emblematic of the complete lack of planning.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to use the term a lot, and folks will hear me say it a lot. It's blocking and tackling. You know, the basics of what we do, we're getting worse at. And again, I think it's 100% on the leadership. You know, when they say we have the most efficient routes for snowplows, I don't believe it.
No.
Because this $12 million department is run with a quote-unquote paper system. We don't, you know, your children, social schedule has a more sophisticated tracking method than our $12 million Department of Public Works. It's unacceptable. And, you know, you just look at how much technology's changed in the last 10 years. There's no way in the world we're using technology to our benefit like we should, like our citizens should expect us to. And those are some of the things I'm definitely going to be making a change, because you can't improve something you don't measure.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't measure it, you're lying. If you're saying you're making an improvement, or our goal is to be better than what?
Well,
if you don't measure, you don't know.
And if you don't understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, if you don't measure it, how can you understand
right.
it?
That's right.
You know, and so, you know, when you talk about staffing, you know, the first term I'm going to be looking at, one, creating that baseline, be able to measure the effectiveness of our work, and then we're going to do what's called a gap analysis. Here's where we are, here's where we should be, and where we need to be. And I'll be making a case with data that supports adding more jobs. You know, when you don't measure anything, you can't tell me we're effective in the use and the management of our budgets.
Sure.
When you're giving back $1 million in one hand, you're a poor budgeter, and in the other hand, you're using the excuse of not having enough people to not get services done.
That's right.
You can't have it both ways.
Especially when you have important needs like infrastructure and you're given $1 million back, that could be
it's absurd.
Money that goes underground to improve. Like you said, you're not you're not anti-growth, you're pro-growth, but I think it has to be managed in such a way that the infrastructure is improved in whatever area you're going to build in. So when they tie into that line, it's not going to overtax a bad line to begin with.
Absolutely. You know, again, the infrastructure, depending on where you are in the city, we have modern lines, we have good mains, but in other parts, we don't. And would you like to have a line fail when it's perfect and it doesn't cost a lot of problems for the businesses or the community? Yeah, but that's not when lines fail.
No.
They fail when the weather's poor or they're stressed because of use. But let me think. February in upstate New York, again, I don't want a guy having to climb in a hole when it's negative 20 out to try and fix a problem. And at the same time, in the middle of August, can you imagine losing water on Phyla Street?
Even South Broadway.
Again, it's just unacceptable.
I don't know if you were, I can't remember the exact year, you may have been in college then, but they put a new line, they were going to put a new line on where Dunkin' Donuts is on South Broadway, and they were only going to put a small section, but every time they vibrated the line to get it up, the line broke like two stores down. Then they went to replace that, and the vibration broke. I mean, they ended up having to do almost down to the baths.
It's like when you're renovating an old home. I live in a house from 1872. You never know what you're going to find when you open up a wall.
Right.
And so, hey, caller.
Yeah, we have a caller. So hold that thought,
absolutely.
Okay, and write it down if you're going to lose your spot. But we'll take this call. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, Dylan. Great show, great subject. A couple of things. I want to know about that intersection that's near the Marriott where Excelsior and High Rock come together. That intersection has been closed since October. Supposedly, the water is contaminated, but you don't read or hear anything about it in the paper. And the other thing is, if you're elected, Dylan, I mean, can we stop watering the plants at 12:45 in the afternoon? I mean, they seem to water the plants and do these things at the most inopportune times. And yesterday I was driving down Broadway, and people had to come to a screeching halt because that big water truck is there. It's blocking traffic. You have people trying to take a left on Phyla at the same time, and it's just a mess. And some of these people in DPW drive around like it's NASCAR. And what are you going to do to reel some of these people in? Because I think it's also a safety concern. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks. See you soon.
Well, thanks, Nancy. A few things there. So let me see if I grabbed all of them. First off, you're speaking of the intersection, which is kind of below the
Marriott.
The Marriott. Thank you. What you have to understand is when you go by that piece of land that essentially seems like, geez, why don't they do something with this? It's a Superfund site, okay? It's a capped area. There are containment wells that make sure that the contamination that's there doesn't get into our drinking water. It's appropriately managed. It used to be a coal gasification plant. So what they would do essentially, there's a process where you can extract natural gas from coal, and that's how they used to light lights around here. It was a big operation, and as you can imagine, the waste from that enters the soil just like a lot of other places around this community and every community in the country. What they became aware of is that there was an area that needed further remediation, and so coming off of that into the area where that spring is, that's the work that they're doing. That's the reason for it. There's a project again, related to our Complete Streets program, related to making our community more walkable, more bikeable, less dependent on cars, that's also engaged in that. And that intersection actually is going to be improved in a way that will greatly increase safety. I live just up, that's Ludlow and, Warren right there. Mm-hmm. And there's that weird intersection. They're creating stops, clear paths of travel so that it's not a guess. Because a lot of folks who come in from outside of town, you know, encounter that intersection. They have no idea what they're doing. And it's not really apparent. And like an old community, not every street is ideal. We have an opportunity now between that project and the work that we're doing to take the path all the way out to exit 15 and connect that to our downtown core. So we're fortunate, and I think that's a really good project. And the mayor's very involved with, again, our Complete Streets program and, the mission that we all took on as a community when that was voted in. Current commissioner doesn't really acknowledge the Complete Streets program exists. I do. I know what it's about, and I'm going to help aid and move forward the plans that have been stalled largely in part because of him. So beyond that, you asked a couple other questions as it relates. You know, one of the things I picked up on was vehicles. And we have had several incidents with city workers with issues with their driver's licenses. One time a gentleman got into a car accident, and that's how we found out he didn't have a license. These are big vehicles. You have to have a certain professional license to be able to drive them.
Yeah. Sure.
How do we have people behind the wheel that don't have licenses? Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about the fundamental aspects of management and understanding what the requirements are of a job and making sure the people on the road are appropriately licensed and practicing safe driving habits.
Sure.
I couldn't agree with you more. I live on Lake Ave. People drive, 60 miles an hour down my stretch of the road. Vehicle traffic has to go slower. It has to be cognizant of the fact that we have human beings walking around, biking around. And that's a lot of what Complete Streets is about. It's about, again, shifting the emphasis from a vehicle that spews pollution to multimodal travel, whether that's public, through buses and tear gas, and done a lot as our county representative to improve access to things like CDTA. And again, beyond that, the biking community. And I think, listen, I walk all the time around town. It's one of the greatest things about this city is that it's so walkable. You can get from one side of town to the other easily. And again, we have an older community. There's folks who don't necessarily have the faculties as they once did. Once winter hits, they're immobile. They're stuck on their block because of snow. One of the things that I'm going to show with the way we're going to approach snow removal is after the storm's done, we're going to start working center out, and we're going to clear those corners where people then can go from block to block to block safely without having to get their rappelling gear out to get up and over a snowbank. It's not safe. Those snowbanks at the corners are incredibly unsafe for vehicles who are trying to get in or across the street. So there's a lot of things that it causes issues on. And again, it's a basic service.
Well, one of the things that that used to happen before, but doesn't happen now, is, and I see a former deputy all the time. I have coffee with him, and that was that they used to remove the snow from Broadway all the way to the road, because you park on Broadway, you can't get out the passenger side door because there's snow banks there. And I used to have that snow removed. And he used to do it at 5:30 in the morning or whatever, so that when businesses opened up, people went downtown, they could get out and out of their car.
Yep.
And for some reason, that was stopped. And, the little things like that people don't think is a big issue is an issue, because we are now a tourist city. I mean, we got to face it. We're not the small community that we were. We're not the city in the country. We're we're getting to be a bigger city and a tourist city. And when you get somebody in town and they can't get out of their car on the passenger side, you know, that's pretty bad.
No, I agree. And again, it goes back to that basic term I'm going to use over and over again, blocking and tackling. We're getting worse at the basic services. And when I say worse, the direction of what's acceptable has lessened. The expectation that we put on ourselves has been lessened. Again, it's that focus. Does it benefit Skip or not?
Right.
And if it doesn't benefit Skip, it doesn't happen. I'll give you a great example. Recycling. It's been mandated since the 90s that you have to recycle it. As a community, you have to have a recycling program. I was at a recent city council meeting, and a group of Skidmore students put on a great presentation. They, again, you know, it's a community in government class. They did polling of the community. They gauged attitudes. They did a modern analysis of statistics. Again, I have a Six Sigma black belt, so that really appeals to me, that when you use data to make decisions, you get the right decision generally. The commissioner was informed that, you know, we don't have recycling, the community wants it, and oh, by the way, it's been a requirement of New York State law since 1995. His excuse, because it's not a reason and it's an excuse, was that in 2012 when he eliminated it, it was because there wasn't single stream recycling and it was too hard.
Oh.
And so I very quickly just texted my wife, and within seconds, she found an article in the Saratogian saying we've had single-stream recycling in Saratoga since at least 2010. So that's a flat-out lie.
Sure.
There are recycling receptacles in City Hall before, obviously, the incident with the fire and the water damage. The guy would go up. You know, so let's say you're conscientious. You want to recycle, as we all should. The gentleman who would, you know, clean the building at the end of the night would just take those receptacles and throw them in the garbage.
Yeah.
That is not acceptable. No. And again, you know, these are the types of things as a modern community we want to be. You mentioned the city and the country. I still believe we're the city and the country. And at the same time, I can understand the perception that we're changing because we keep clear-cutting properties. We keep chopping down trees. We're down about 7,000 trees, I believe the number is. Sustainable Saratoga has a great event called Treetoga. I've done it for the last few years, and I've just learned a lot about our canopy and the losses that we've experienced. I encourage anybody in town to check that program out, check that group out. They're a great group. We want to reforest this community.
It's healthier.
Absolutely. People benefit from the existence of trees. It mitigates pollution. The greenery provides a more serene and beautiful landscape. Shade provides the cooling for your house that you don't have to stress the electrical grid with air conditioning. So there's so many ancillary benefits to something as simple as planting a tree. We don't spend the money in the budget every single year that's allocated towards this. It's not fair.
No, it isn't.
No.
You know, what I like about you is that you can explain a subject so that people understand it. And people need to know the bigger issues, because it's always been said, if you turn your spigot on and you get water coming out, or your leaves get picked up, excuse me.
Your leaves get picked up?
Almost in December, but
mine
no,
didn't.
If your leaves get picked up, then, you know, DPW is doing their job. But that's not the case. It's the things that people don't see, or the little things that made Saratoga the city that won all the awards. And I think Nancy hit another thing, the watering of flowers in the middle of the day. And now that used to be done at 6, 7 in the morning. And I remember this past deputy commissioner used to have his men go down the sidewalks of Broadway and clean them, probably with a sweeper, right? And you got all of them, even the stairway that goes in between the two buildings. I can't put in the markets, I think, and that, and they're filthy all day. I mean, you hate walking up the stairs, but it's the little things like that. That the city was ready when the businesses opened up, that
absolutely,
they were clean, that the trash was emptied. He used to have one one crew go down one side of Broadway, take the plastic bags out, set them there, and put the new ones in, and then one crew followed and picked the bags up, you know. So it was a kind of an operation that went smooth, got it done fast, and at 9 o'clock the city was ready to, was pristine and ready to open. And that's a little thing, but people take notice of that, and they don't consider it when it comes election time.
Well, it's blocking and tackling. Again, it's the right. Basic services. Every year the commissioner puts out an annual report, and in 2017, the year that we had the reportable incident to DOH for disinfection byproduct exceedance, that annual report is some on, well, every annual report, because it's the same one every single year, but there are 7 pages on the flowers, and water doesn't show up until page 31, and there's 2 pages on water. So I would question the priorities. Look, the flowers look great. We like that.
Yeah,
it's
we
important.
Do.
I think it's, I think it again speaks to the nature of what you said. We're a tourist community. We want to be welcoming. We really want to see, you know, people feel comfortable, have a unique experience, really come away with that Saratoga experience that we're famous for. So flowers, again, there's absolutely no problem with it. It's, but where do they fit in the priorities of things?
Page 34.
Exactly. You know, is I care about page 34.
Okay. Well, we'll take this caller. Morning, Greg.
Hey, good morning, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, great show. I had a couple questions I wanted to ask while I had the expertise there. I live out in the town of Saratoga, so I'm not on public water, but I've been around since 96, and I've sort of observed things from a little bit of a distance. And having worked in the insurance industry, I can concur with the problem with the water. And where it also influences the community is these, all this construction now is lightweight construction with sprinkler systems. And they don't have an adequate water supply, and mains supplying those sprinklers, they're not going to work, and you have a possibility of fires that are really significant. So I do concur, but how do you fix that? And then the one simple solution, I mean, economically, how do you fix all that infrastructure? How do you fund that? That's one question. And then the other, listening to the supply, and you want to remain with local control, but what about the county developing this countywide system, and they brought it down to Malta and so forth? Isn't that the inevitable answer, or what? But how do you fund fixing all that infrastructure underneath? That's my question, all these pipes that are so old.
Greg, I really appreciate that question. It actually brings back to a question I didn't answer earlier that
Rick had asked. Do you have your radio on, Greg?
Yeah, is my connection screwing you up?
No, it isn't, but as long as you can hear Dylan, that's fine.
All right.
So, you know, a couple things. One, there are significant flow and pressure issues throughout the city. There are, just in the downtown area, there's 20 miles of 4-inch pipe that's over 100 years old. It's cast iron. It is heavily occluded, and what I mean by that, we have hard water. There's magnesium and calcium dissolved in the water, and as it flows, it starts to deposit out on the insides of the pipe. So what occluded means is essentially your 4-inch pipe starts to get choked down to a 1-inch pipe, half-inch pipe, closed pipe. That's the phenomenon. And so when your house is on fire and they go to open up a hydrant and no water comes out, it's critical. They don't do hydrant maintenance. They don't do flow and pressure tests. Can you imagine being one of our firemen who, again, these guys get paid to run into burning buildings? I cannot imagine going to work with that specter of, you know, that's the busy day. I hope they have a lot of boring days, quite honestly, because if they go charging into a building and there's no water, we have not met our promise to give those men the tools that they need to perform their heroic tasks.
Well, I agree. I guess my question is, I've seen some of the neighboring cities like Troy being shut down, you know, segments of their city because of water breaks that have occurred there, and water freeze-ups in Lansingburg. I mean, we're not immune from that. So nope. To correct that, how do you, I mean, this is a big thing. Cities can't handle it. How does Saratoga Springs handle that?
First, you actually have the commitment to do it. So that situation I mentioned with the pipes, you have to start doing something. I know for the last 5 years, our city engineer, we have a great city engineer, has been begging the commissioner to start to commit to do 1 mile a year. It's about $1 million to $1.5 million, depending on site conditions. You know, there's bedrock right below Broadway, for instance. It's very difficult to use modern techniques where they push pipe under the ground. We have to actually excavate and replace. But you start doing it. So if you look at those 20 miles and we did a mile a year, 20 years from now, it's all replaced.
Well, you know,
but to fund it, this is the other important thing. So in order to fund infrastructure, it's a fee-based situation. So you use 1,000 gallons of water, you pay X. That's the metering. Those funds are the only funds we can really use for that type of maintenance. And we were talking about, you know, the impact of development. And, you know, again, you go into a bigger building, you're drawing more water, there's an impact and a strain that's applied to our system. Well, there used to be these things called connection fees, where when you connected to our system, you had to pay a fee. It was $3,000, I believe, for the first connection, and then $2,000 after that. So let's say you had you were building, for instance, a 300-unit development next to the post office. That's $600,000 that the city would collect. Well, our commissioner was caught giving out selectively to different developers the ability not to pay that fee. And the community, the city council, in order to protect itself from lawsuits, retroactively passed a bill to eliminate that fee. Later on, a fee appeared on your water bill as a homeowner, where you now are paying that fee. So we shifted the burden from developers to communities, and they're the ones that are taxing our system. And this is an issue of tax fairness. Again, I am not against development in any way, shape, or form, but you have to understand how fractional ownership, and when I say that, a condo is taxed differently than a house is. If you buy a $1 million condo, you can only be taxed on the market rental rate for that establishment. So you buy a $1 million condo, and let's just say they could get $20,000 a month rent, which is absurd. I mean, can you imagine paying $20,000 a month for rent? But so that's $240,000. The mill rate that you pay on your house that you may have bought in the 70s for $30,000, but now you're assessed at $300,000, you have a small bungalow on Jamel Place. You're paying more in taxes than the guy who owns the $1 million condo. So the strain that they put on our infrastructure, they don't support through their fees proportionate to the way that we are. And we used to have that mechanism to take some money that was reflective of the impact on our infrastructure. It's important. You know, again, it goes to tax fairness. I'm going to be bringing back those fees because it's fair, because it's appropriate, and we need to have some balance between the development and the rights of citizenry. There are several issues with development that I have concern with. And again, it relates to balance. What are the rights of you as a homeowner not to have somebody buy the house next to you, knock it down, and build a mansion that's totally inappropriate for your neighborhood, you know?
You know, Greg, I think one of the things also, I don't want to put words in his mouth that Dylan's going to look into is a few years ago they had a fire on Woodlawn. It was an apartment building, or I forget what they call that.
Like, well, it was a series of brownstones on Woodlawn.
They went to use the fire hydrant, and the line that went into the fire hydrant was not sufficient enough to put a fire out if it got out of control. So they ended up putting a new line in.
I got a good story about that.
Yeah,
they put the main line in, and they didn't replace the what are called laterals. So if you live off of Woodlawn and they replace the main water line and you're a side street, guess what? You have an old pipe.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's useful information. Thank you. And I agree. It is a real issue. What about using the county water source instead of relying upon local stuff? I heard you mention that briefly, and you said you'd lose control, which is obvious. But
you'd lose control.
What's the pros and cons of that?
Listen, we had the forethought to when they put those lines in, there are, I believe, five tap-in locations that we could access and bring water in from the county. But I've worked in this industry for a while. they're not producing water that is of a quality that I would support bringing into this community. They have disinfection byproduct problems. I'm very aware of them. I was working to, at one point in time, to help try and solve them. Talk to folks in Round Lake. Talk to folks in Clifton Park about the county water. Talk to folks at Global Foundries, where the quality of that water has caused fabrication issues. And they've had to expend a lot of money on pretreatment to get the water to the quality that they need. So not in favor of using the county water, not in favor of giving up our control. But let's say there was a catastrophic situation. Let's say the dam that supports our reservoir fails, because it's in the process of failing right now. We could lose our reservoir. In that case, we do have backup. And I've actually had meetings with Tara Gaston to talk about that. She has repeatedly requested of the current commissioner to have these conversations. He refuses to meet with her. Tara and I have already talked, coordinated, and I certainly understand how we can access if it was needed, but it would only be in an emergency situation, and it would only be such that we would use it until we got back our system, our control, and again,
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to hang up. Thanks for all that information. That's great. Hey, thanks, Rick.
Greg, and nice hearing from you again. You take care.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye. We have about 5 minutes to go, but I would
can fill
like
that up.
I know you can, and it's great because I want to have you on again. This topic is so huge, but I want to just ask you about improving the quality of city sidewalks and roads. They seem to be pitiful, especially the roads. And I know in the wintertime they take a beating, but they just don't seem to repair them well enough that. You know, I mean,
there's
a
no
month
rhyme
later.
There's no rhyme or reason to what we do. I know this for a fact. There's a gentleman who serves on the board of Complete Streets who also happens to be a transportation engineer. He's witnessed it himself. There is literally no process to grade both the importance and the condition of our roads. So, you know, again, when you make decisions on how to prioritize things, you have to measure them. How do you make decisions without those measurements? We're going to institute a catalog, what we call assets, whether they be under the ground, pipes like we're talking about, or they're roads. Those are assets. Those are pieces of our infrastructure. And we're going to grade them. We're going to understand the importance of that road to the, and the criticality of it to the community, and then the condition. And we use those criteria to ultimately make decisions on which roads we improve. But I mean, you know, I think at some point in time we may have a contest to show me your hole. And what I mean by that is a pothole. They're everywhere. I mean, there are certain streets that are literally just a patch. Patch after patch after patch. When you have a predictive means of, and those patches in a lot of cases are there because folks have had to replace their water service because we have old homes, whether it's a galvanized pipe that was coming into the house, we've all had, or a lot of us have had that failure where suddenly you don't have water and you got to dig a hole, it's usually February, and have that put in. So that patch is put in and you can see it house after house after house after house. If you can know a year in advance what roads you're going to be working on, you can tell everybody on that road, hey, if you haven't had your water service replaced, plan it. We can line it up, and you can get that water service replaced cheaper than it ever will be because the road will be opened up. We can coordinate it with the local trades. And again, that's called community service. That's right. Called predictive, and the things that you can do with predictive maintenance as opposed to reactionary maintenance
exactly.
will better serve the community.
And planning. That's
absolutely
what you should be doing.
Or drive an SUV.
Right. That's right. One of the two things. I want you now, like I say, it's a little after the top of the hour, your contact information.
Sure. So we're on a couple of the platforms you can expect. We have a regular webpage. It's Elect Dylan Moran, DillonMoran.com. On there, you can give us your contact information if you just want to be kept on in the loop and in touch with the events that we're going to have. As we, you know, once the primary's through, we're going to be getting out and starting to knock on doors and have the opportunity to speak to folks face to face. I want to be able to reflect the needs of the community and the concerns that they have. So while as a professional, I have a certain view and a certain perspective, you know, it's only as important as it is to the folks who are going to, who I'm asking to vote for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I often say, you know, I would be happy with the results of election if 100% of people voted. We're very lucky in this community that in off-year elections, we're getting 60, 70% of our community to show up and vote. I think mm-hmm. that's tremendous. It makes me feel great about the community that I live in. You know, we have an upcoming primary in the Democratic Party. I hope that all the Democrats out there get out and you know, put their vote in for Michelle Madigan. I think she deserves the opportunity to continue to serve the community. And then once that election is through, you can expect to see us.
Okay.
We also... Dylan Moran for Public Works is our Facebook page. Again, you can volunteer your time. We would be so appreciative of that. Obviously, money is a part of every campaign. If folks want to make a donation, we have a PayPal account set up that you can make donations to, or you can come to one of our events. We would certainly appreciate your support, but strictly, I care about getting your votes. I want you to understand the sincerity of my purpose, and I'm really here to serve the community.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Rick. I really appreciate it.
We'll have you back on again. I will, though, take a discrepancy, and I can cut this out of your
whatever
podcast. I am wishing Patty Morrison well.
And that's fair, and that's the great thing about elections is we can be a community. We can agree about 95% of the things, and, you know, we don't agree 5% of the time, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't, and I wish more people did that.
Yeah, well, we become so binary in our choices, in the choices that are offered to us through media or through this two-party system we have. I am not that type of person. I don't think that Republicans care less about water. I don't think that Democrats care more about water. We're all human beings. We're all citizens of Saratoga first and foremost, and especially at the local level. Partisan politics just has no place in what we're trying to do, certainly what I'm trying to do.
Right. And I'm glad that there's...
And again, Patty's a great person. I know her personally.
Oh, she is. She's a great person. But I'm glad there's contested races this year.
Me too. That's what matters. You have a choice.
It does. You have a choice. And for so long, there were so many uncontested races. And that's not healthy, even for the community.
I'm running against hasn't been challenged in 10 years.
Right. Right. And that should be a factor is to get out the vote.
Because, it's time for a change, folks. Yeah. It's time for a change.
Hey, you have a great weekend. I thank you again for coming in and explaining things in terms that we can all understand. And some of the goals that you're setting are very important ones and have needed to be done over the years.
I appreciate that.
We'll have you back again. And everybody, have a great week. And remember, June the 6th is D-Day. And try and celebrate it in your own way. But just remember it and maybe say a prayer for all those that died.
Amen to that.
In that, yes. So have a great week, and we'll see you next Saturday.